Are you seeking more depth, more meaning, and a place to connect from the heart with fellow coaches and leaders? Then this is the right place. At Awaken Coach Institute, we create community where you can truly belong and show up as your whole self. Welcome to another episode on the Awaken Voices podcast. If you are a person that is just so compassionate and loves to be empathetic with the people around them, but also sometimes finds it really hard to set boundaries when needed, this episode is for you. Because we have Molly Davis on our podcast in today's conversation, sharing about becoming boundaried. She's an expert on, not only setting boundaries, but setting boundaries from a place of love and care and just rewiring the way that we've been brought up. Let's dive into this episode, and I really hope that you enjoy this conversation.
Hello, dear Molly.
Hi, Christy.
Where are you calling in from today?
Well, I'm in Maui. My Alaskan body is in Maui, which is wonderful. So we just finished up an incredible retreat. So I'm here for a few days afterwards. And I'm not sad about being in the tropics by the ocean with fresh fruit. So amazing.
Oh, and it's so good to add those days after a retreat, because I know how much it takes to be a retreat host, how much spiritual energy, how much love goes into it. And some of my most beloved ones got to join you on the retreat. So I have heard some good things about it already.
I know. We went out to dinner last night. It's really true. I was completely wiped out the last couple of days. I have a long to-do list of things. I cracked open the laptop to get started, and I was like, I am doing nothing.
Exactly.
Just need to absolutely do nothing.
Every year after our 2-week Spain intensive, I give myself 2 days to do nothing. I just stay in bed. And then afterwards, I'm like, wait, why did I think I could start work again after 3 days? That was way too short. It's just so holding that container of love for people doing deep tectonic shift work, as you like to call it, is quite something. Yeah. So before we start, I just wanted to let people know how I know you, because you have been my boundaries coach, and I took your boundaries boot camp, which was an amazing experience. And you've just been such a beacon of love and just overflowing joy and happiness just from your way of living. And I think we have some similarities in our backgrounds. And then you're a business owner now. So what else do you want to say about yourself to get introduced to the Awaken community?
Well, I just interviewed you. I don't know when this episode will come out, but just to your community, I adore Christy. And you just, oh my goodness, your interview was incredible on my podcast. So it's really fun to come in and relax and let you ask the questions. And you're someone so easy to talk to because there's so many things that we have in common, but then also that I love your focus on love, and mine is the same, and it's a joy to be on the same team.
It really is. And because that's what it all ends up coming down to. It doesn't matter if I'm doing coach training or you're teaching about boundaries, either way, when we love ourselves, or it's, I don't even know if self-love is the right word, it's just being in the great love is what it all comes down to. But what would you say is the connection between
Oh,
love, if
yeah.
you want to use that word, and becoming boundaried?
Yeah, everything. For me, I think here's how I would put it. When I spent some time of my life devoutly, I would say religious, inside of a fundamentalist group, because that's what I thought was true. That's what I was told was true. And I have a had a devotion to love, what I call love with a capital L. And in that period, I grew and grew and grew and found myself at the edges of the walls of this system. And I felt so confused about it because it was love in me that just wanted to pop out. Except the system said that was not love. And found myself unintentionally finding the boundaries of that very restrictive theology. And again, nothing against theology, nothing against anyone's beliefs. This was my experience in a particular type of spiritual group. And I popped out. And it made me think a lot about the edges of things. Like, wait a minute, these folks say they're love, and yet they actually restrict love. They nurtured life for a time, but then life was actually restricted. And I couldn't help but see it in terms of edges, skin, boundaries. I kept making a metaphor out of it. And then it made me start thinking, I experienced a great deal of pain and even abuse because of that particular way of understanding life. Theology and philosophy and those sorts of frameworks sort of give us a definition of who we are and what our place is in the world, and who the world is and what their place and what our fellow humans' place is. And I began thinking of those things in terms by using the word boundaries, the boundaries that we were given define us and actually define our reality and how we will experience our reality and how we'll show up for it and what we think our choices are. Because, for example, inside of the very restrictive system I was in and the very restrictive situation I was in inside of that, I didn't even know I had any choices. I thought my highest calling for love was going to be dying, actually, in this particular situation, which would probably result in my death had I stayed. And so when I got out on the other side of that, I became fascinated with the idea of boundaries from that way of seeing them. And I really wanted to help others so that they wouldn't be trapped in that same way. So I thought I was going to become like, I thought I'd run like a domestic violence shelter or something like that, because I was really focused on boundaries in relationships and what makes an adult participate in abuse. What makes an adult not know that they have any other choice but to remain in an abusive relationship? And then from there, I began working in residential treatment for addictions. I'm a therapist. I began working in larger and larger spheres and realizing, oh, I thought the problem was this very restrictive theology inside of this very restrictive group. Now I'm out here in the big wide world. Holy shit,
this is everywhere. It's everywhere in every kind of way. I would realize the person coming in with severe addiction, they also were given a certain set of boundaries about themselves and how the world works that don't work for them. And then their families that are coming in that I'm providing counseling for, they also have a certain, I mean, they're trying everything to save their person's, their loved one's life, but they also have a certain set of quote, quote, toxic boundaries, the edges they were given for what it means to be a human and how they're supposed to show up are also messed up. And we're all trying to figure out how to live with these quote, quote, boundaries that suck. And I kept thinking, somebody ought to do something about this. Somebody needs to make a class. Somebody needs to do a thing. I actually did make a class inside of the different programs I was in, but And it went from there. Then I opened a private practice, and then I started working with my fellow counselors and physicians and, you know, people who are government leaders and people who are going to come to a private practice where they can have some privacy, but know that they're going to be in good hands. And I just, that was what tipped me right over the edge, I think, was I was like, it's all of us. We need anybody with a compassionate heart trying to show up in the world with the quote, quote, boundaries they're given for how to show up, which means keep the people pleased, make everybody happy, fix someone else's problems, take on all the responsibilities of everything going wrong because you're really good at fixing it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Like, someone needs to do something about this. And it took me still about 4 or 5 years before I realized, I think I'm supposed to do something about it. I think the reason this is aching so much inside of me is because this has been given to me to do.
It has. And it also feels like a movement that more and more of us are waking up to. Like, you're not alone. Absolutely. In it. Because it's even the way you're talking about, like, it started with my personal story, my personal relationship, the group that I was in. And at some point, you don't even need to name the group that you were in anymore. It reminds me of, like, I read a book recently by Carla McLaren called Missing the Solstice, because she was in the New Age. And so, you know, I grew up in a Christian perspective, and I would have thought, like, oh, the New Agers, they're so wild and free. And, you know, that would be my imagination of it. But when you're in it, it doesn't matter what fundamentalist group you're part of, you still get these restrictions. Well, if you don't believe this, or if you do, you know, you're not vegan, or you eat this food, or whatever the restrictions are, these fake boundaries. She built something called the Off-Ramp Project, which I just think is a gorgeous name, because you want to give people these gentle ways to move out of restrictions and find out, like, oh, these fake boundaries, like, it's like the Truman Show.
It is.
That sky that they built over your head is a fake sky. It's not even there. But once you get out into the big wide world, your boundaries were already there inside of you, just ready to come out. Like, what would you say in your own story about finding those in the truth inside, or however you want to call it?
I love that. When I kind of saw what it is that I'm here to do, it suddenly became very clear that there is no competition. There's no that. The humans are waking up, and yay, it doesn't look like it sometimes, depending on where you're at, but there's a massive shift going on in humans. And we've needed it for a long time. There's been a great deal of suffering for a long time because we haven't been awakened to love. Some have, some are, but there's, I wrote a parable about it in the book. It's about to get published.
I know. I pre-ordered. I can't wait to see your book.
But from that vantage point, you know, from the vantage point of capitalism and competition and your worth is tied to whatever it is that you do, we're all in competition. You and I are in competition. There's a competition going on. to like get whatever it is, status, paid, whatever. There's only one pie and there's only, you know, there's, you got to get yours. And what I love about coming into this work from love, as love, to spread seeds of love, to nourish and nurture love growing inside of people is we're literally all on the same team. There is no competition. There are many ways to, I like how you put, she has an off ramp. You have a beautiful program and flow. I do. So many people do. It's so exciting to work for love. And to, I think the process is, and I'm going to get into mine, but for example, my calling is to work with compassionate people, but my most special, excited thing, the thing that just fills me with joy is leaders, healers, world changers, movers and shakers, activists. I felt like boundaries are a missing piece of this. Because when you came to me, you're awake, Christy. Waking you up. You know what I mean? It wasn't about that, but it's this missing piece of what we need in order to do this thing that we're each supposed to do. That one of the missing pieces is understanding our true innate boundaries, and they are in there. But how in the world do you find them under all the sludge of programming and conditioning we were given? And so my favorite thing to do is like almost wash off all that stuff. There they are. And to help people go, no, you can trust this. This right here is yours. It is innate. Someday we will have a world where children are trained to listen to this, to our innate boundaries from the get. But we don't have that yet.
But no, we're so confused. No, yes. And one of my favorite parables is from a book called Whole Child, Whole Parent by Polly Berry and Behrens. And she says, parents literally do not ever confuse their child with poop. They know that their clean child is underneath the poop. Even if their kid shits themselves 15 times a day, they're just going to keep washing it off because they know the clean child is underneath. But metaphorically, we confuse ourselves constantly. We think that thoughts,
been told
emotions,
we are.
Like, we think like, I see shit. That means that's what it is.
That's me. Yeah, no, exactly. It's so true. In my own journey out, I mean, there was it was long and painful, I would say, actually. It was very long. Mm-hmm. I felt like going from one, I mean, for me, it just literally the best metaphor would be, yay, I'm free, and getting tipped, like an egg getting tipped into a different frying pan. And a different set of veggies getting sauteed. And then, okay, this hurts really, really bad. I'm ready to leave it now. And then getting tipped into another one. This is great. Now I am all better. Hearing the sizzle. And I think I long for the day when pain is not a teacher. Pain does not have to be a teacher. But as we all know, pain can be an incredible teacher, which is not excusing terrible things or justifying them at all. However, terrible things can be incredibly motivating.
Well, they're truthful. I mean, pain is truthful. Like if somebody has leprosy and their fingers are falling off because they can't feel anything, you kind of wish you had those pain sensors so that you would stop sticking your fingers into actively burning coals or something, right?
Yes, exactly. I think that the a lot of, because I was so fascinated with boundaries and because I was looking at things with the boundaries lens, I would be evaluating all the different situations I was in from that lens and not realizing I was going to be pulled to create this course later. So it was in those experiences, the nuances, the details, the unique contexts were forming what I would then go on to be able to teach at a level I couldn't have had life been idyllic.
I just wrote my memoir and I thought it was going to be a book about love. And it was a book about all the ways I missed it or tried to get it from others or give it to others or create it or, you know, all the things that cannot be done with love, because love just is. It cannot be created or destroyed. It is infinite. And so trying to produce it yourself or give it or take it from someone makes no sense. But that's the only way to write the book, because that's what all of us humans understand. Like, we get it. We're all doing it wrong all day long. And that makes for really good reading. But if you were just going to be like, this feels so good all the time.
No, here's my book. Yes.
Nobody's going to read that book or get it. We'll live in an ashram or something. But yeah.
Yeah, it's so true. If you're asking the question, I know there's people here listening probably asking that question. I want to say it's the question. It is a worthy question. How does love come through my hands and feet? Like, how does it become? Because that was one of the things that really bugged me coming out of the fundamentalist world, but then coming out into the big wide world and finding it everywhere. I don't want to just know more stuff in my head. Anyone can put some stuff in their head and have some books on their shelf and attend a training and just add more, all of which are good things, right? Add more intellectual knowledge into the library of the brain. What happens in that moment when I'm triggered or in this moment here? That is like hard, hard stuff. How do we humans get it from here? This is great. Down into the heart, flowing all the way out through how I walk, how I move, how I be in this world in a real way, not a fake way. Because we can all kind of like, oh, hello, how are you? We can all pretend to be nice. I don't mean pretend nice at all. I mean like love with a capital L when it's hard, when it's annoying, when it's, you know, what does that look like? How would that feel? How can that happen? I believe it's possible. And some of what I kept seeing, I would, as I'm sort of studying this and trying to find this in me, I kept seeing people that knew a lot of things and then behaved completely differently. I remember working with or under a leader who knew all the right things, but was operating so outside of love, and just really, that was kind of one of those moments. It's not just inside of the halls of fundamentalism. It's here, it's here, it's there, it's everywhere. I don't want to join the hypocrites. I don't want to. That is not the answer for this world, is more knowledge.
That's why, like, when you're teaching about loving yourself, it just seems like it's so important that it starts here. Because I think that's what hypocrisy does, is it says it's an intellectual thing, or it's about loving someone far away on another continent, which is true, but it's only true if you can love the people in your own house. Like, to
they're
me,
the hardest ones. Yes. They're the hardest.
I mean, I even look around. I'll just share my little embarrassing thing. There's a dying plant up there. And that's what tells me, like, I surround myself with plants. I kind of know how well I'm doing by, like, did I notice the living organisms in my immediate environment and what's going on with me if I could have sat there on that couch for 4 days watching that plant turn yellow, you know? And it's and same with our kids and our spouses and our whoever else is right here. Who is your neighbor? And your neighbor is somebody that's really, really close to you.
It's so hard.
It's so hard.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, to understand, that's the work. It's so cool, kind of. It's not actually as sexy as you think it's going to be. It's actually, it's the classroom of love is available to us all right here.
Yeah.
And it's a uniquely suited classroom for each one of us. It's a pain in the ass classroom. It's a miserable classroom. It's not fun and exciting most of the time. But that's actually where to start practicing with a lot of grace. Because it's literally, I always say inside my program, you know, like somebody will be having epiphanies and amazing stuff, and then they're going to go home for the holidays. And it's, I always like encourage them in saying, this is, if you can do it with your family, you can do it anywhere. Everything else is easy if you can do this with your family.
Exactly. Even in an executive coaching, you coach any leader or talk to any leader, and half the time it's like, okay, how are things with your parents and your siblings? And what happens in your family constellation is just going to be replicated in whatever other systems that you're in. And it does have a lot to do with spirituality too. I mean, if you're we're all imagining God in some way or another. And if you're imagining a God who is a white male, distant figure who likes to punish people and is intensely interested in people's sex lives, that's going to show up in your parenting or in your leadership or whatever, even if you don't even think you're thinking about.
So true. Or the wounds, the attachment wounds that you're not facing. And almost all of us have attachment wounds. But if you're not facing them, thinking you're hiding them, I promise you, the people who love you know they're there. And you don't, you know, it's like, it's kind of neat in a way. It's really hard on our egos. It's kind of cool, though, in a way, how you can't hide. And everybody has them. We're not actually a special snowflake in that way. Like, we're the walking wounded. This world has been messed up on so many levels. It is particularly if you are, and I can just speak for the dominant culture I'm in. I can't really speak outside of that, but dominant Western culture. What in the world? Yeah. There are so many warped messages along with all the fun stuff. I mean, there's neat stuff in there, but there's so many warped messages about who we are and how we're supposed to show up in this world and what life is all about, that we're all back to the earlier question. We have layers and layers and layers of sludge that has been baked on, caked on, many times before we were even conceived. It's in the epigenetics of trauma coming our way. Ooh, there's a little egg and sperm. Yay! You know, I almost see like layers of strata of beliefs and systems and survival mechanisms, which were very, very important for your ancestors. I think for a lot of us as compassionate people, there's a lot of the epigenetics of trauma often come to us in terms of don't lift your head up. Do not go outside. Do not color outside of the lines. Do not take up space. Take up space, but not too much space. Use your voice, but only in these ways. Like, be a leader, but not like that. You know, like, play the game. Be a good game player inside of these boundaries, but don't actually rock the boat. And so we come into our little life and we're like, oh, okay. And you find really quickly it's kind of impossible to even be, because you are having to contort your body into shapes that it was never made to be. Literally, depending on if you fit the physical requirements of how you're told you're allowed to show up in your particular group. So and metaphysically, spiritually, emotionally, psychologically, you look around at nature and everything gets to be itself, except for the humans. The humans aren't allowed to be themselves. Not truly. And be yourself. But come on, really? No.
Can I ask you something?
Yeah.
Maybe a little vulnerable. You can not answer, of course, whatever. But you used the word grace. And you also said, I don't want to be a hypocrite. I don't want to be one of the hypocrites. What would it be like, or what is it like for you to offer grace to the part of you that is a hypocrite sometimes, if you do have that part?
Yeah, totally. I'm so glad you asked that, because it was a thought in my head as we were floating by on the conversation, but then the flow went elsewhere, as it always does in fun ways. I think there's a great peace and power in acknowledging that I am, that most of us are. I won't say we for everybody. Maybe some people are not. The thing in me that said, I don't want to be a hypocrite, was said because I realized I am. I am one. Here's all these things that I say I believe, but I don't do them. Or if I do them, it's with a very tight, rigid energy. I'm showing up and I'm going to do the right thing, but I am like holding myself like in a vice grip so that I don't actually feel what I feel. I don't actually think what I think. I don't actually say what I want to say, because I'm supposed to do the quote, quote, right thing. And that's supposed to be goodness. The energy I'm giving off is like pain and suffering, because it is. How do I move with authenticity? How do I wash off these layers of sludge? Because I think we are love at our core, and I think love's easy. I think the things that the tree's not working really hard to be the tree. Like, oh my God, I gotta build another circle of stuff in my trunk. How am I supposed to do this? I need to figure this out and see 18 different therapists and coaches and read 5 books and, you know, meditate really hard. Oh, I popped out another ring around my trunk. You know, that's us. We're the ones like struggling our way to birth. Because why? Because we have got layers and layers and layers of faulty conditioning. The humans, unlike the trees, unlike the dolphins, unlike the bugs, unlike the sun, the humans can tell a story, which is our blessing and our curse. We can tell a story about who we are and why we're here. And that is such fun. And it also Fs us up, because that story that we tell, that we then hand down to the next generation, that they then hand down to the next generation, can cause us to believe all sorts of things that go against love. And then we have to contort ourselves to be something that we're not. So unlike everything else, our energy is going towards what we think we're supposed to be, instead of just being able to relax into what we are. So at the end of the day, I would say there's a place for the concept of hypocrite, I think. But I don't know if that's really the best word. I think in truth, at the deepest level, it's just we don't know who we are. And we think we're supposed to be something that we're not. And then we tell other people they're supposed to be that too. And it just causes a bunch of unnecessary suffering. When in reality, if we just clean off the various layers, and it takes some time. I think of it almost like an archaeological dig. Yay, I've healed. No, you just got off one layer. Enjoy the break for a moment, because your higher power, the universe, whatever you want to call it, it's going to show you that next layer soon. You're going to be like, wait, what? I've got to work on that now. And we're just working through the layers, washing them off lovingly, with honor, without beating ourselves up, understanding this is great and holy work that we're doing. Somebody has to do it. The humans down the line, humans need to be able to be born just into who they are without layers and layers and layers of sludge. How is that ever going to happen in this world? Those of us who have lived and survived in dominant culture, we are covered with layers of strata of gunk. Who's going to start the process of getting it washed off? That's us.
It's got to be us, and it can't even be our kids. Like, we can't even say, oh, I hope they have a better life than I did. It's like, no, I've got to give it to myself now. If they're watching me do it, that's way more powerful than me giving them permission. And I feel really honored that you're talking right now with me about your own story, because having known some people that just came from your retreat, you know, there can be this glorification of Molly thing that happens. Oh. You know, that in, you know, you get in a group and they're like, Molly's so amazing. And it happens to me too. Sometimes people need you to be their guru a little bit, which isn't all bad. I mean, to have somebody that's modeling something that you're looking up to, that might be something people need to do for a time, but it can also get intoxicating, or it can, at least for me, sometimes make me feel like, oh, now I have to go back into that. I have to be perfect way of being, because like so many people are looking at me and here we are in this podcast. So we should be like being just a tiny bit shinier than we actually are or something, you know, instead of just being like, yeah, it's pretty hard for me to be loving.
I didn't,
how did that, I act when I hadn't eaten yesterday? Like, you know, whatever.
I feel that I didn't know that. That's, I always get a little itchy when I don't know if anyone's putting me on a pedestal or not, but I'm always like, get a little nervous when that happens, because, but I also understand it. I've, you know, when I work with somebody and I really appreciate how they're showing up, you know, there's just an, it's like, oh my gosh, someone's showing up this way. This is like, it's like hearing a good song. And that's that, I always think that's okay. So hopefully that's what was happening. It probably was. But there's a lot of good songs in this world. And there's a lot of us who have
right.
good songs, learning how to play. It's almost like we're each instruments. And the leaders I love and the standard I hold myself to as a leader, and the thing that will correct me anytime I veer out one way or another, is that had two competing metaphors happening at once. I'm deciding which one. Like, for example, if I'm a guitar, then I want to play the sound that's in me to be played. And I want that sound unencumbered as much as humanly possible. I want the things that are in the way of it, I want them moved. Not because they're bad per se, but they block the sound that's supposed to be coming from me. And I always figure if someone loves that sound, like there's a lot of great healers in this world. If somebody loves this sound, then that is probably because they have a similar sound they're supposed to play. So come on over here, I'll show you how.
Mm-hmm.
And it is my joy to use. So if I have a clearer sound than you've ever known and you love it, come here. Let me show you how to be that too, because you are that. Not to be the sound that I am, but let's clear off whatever sludge is blocking your music, the music you're here to make. Now play. Ooh, did you hear that? I did
right?
too. Gives me chills. It gives me chills just literally with a pretend metaphor.
That's part of why I enjoy working with you so much and why I picked you as my coach, is because there was such a clear mutual respect Like, I didn't feel like you needed to be less than you because you were going to teach me something and therefore then I was going to be better. It's just,
yes,
you know, who cares if somebody's on a pedestal, because we should all be on pedestals a mile high and all at the same height, because we're all equally and infinitely valuable and wonderful, and we're all in the orchestra together, and maybe one's playing the bass and one's playing the cello and another one's on the flute, but we're all part of it. And so
one
of the first things you said coming on here was there's no competition. What would that even be?
I think when we realize, yes, we've been lied to in so many different ways, and I get we all got to pay our bills and whatnot, and this, you know, but if and when everybody's playing their tune, we're all going to lose it with joy, because there is an orchestra. Humans collectively are one species. We are just a little cell in the body. When we all get to our right place functioning, that great passion that we have. For example, when I was working in, in one environment that was so painful. It was so painful to be there. I loved the work, but there was just some stuff happening that was terrible. And I couldn't imagine leaving that environment. I was so loyal to them. And I didn't want to start my own thing. You know, can I just work for somebody else? You've had that experience too.
Yes.
And when we begin to understand, you know, the cell in the body that's supposed to be in the eyeball doesn't feel good down in the big toe. It's not because there's anything wrong with the big toe, because other cells that are in the big toe are like singing the big toe song. They love being collectively being your big toe. But the cell that's supposed to be in the eyeball is going to hate being in the big toe. And when we stop moralizing this and start realizing, when you really can't stand something and you really love something else, that's probably that is a very good intuitive sign you are supposed to be doing something else. You're in the wrong spot.
Many of us were taught the opposite of that, which is what's so difficult. And I think that's one of the major problems with these the groups, that these fundamentalist groups that are more about obedience and, you know, coercion and do what you're told than they are about creativity and true love in the hugest sense, because they teach us that if you're doing what you love, you're probably doing something wrong, that your desires are evil. Don't trust your body. Don't trust yourself. And so it's a whole unlearning and relearning of, oh, can my desires be a guide to what's good? Wow.
Right.
That's a different way to live.
And I think we confuse it too, because of those layers of sludge give us false desires. So the layer of sludge of programming that's covering up our shining light, for lack of a better word, those layers of sludge will tell you what you're supposed to want. And so sometimes I think that's what also makes it hard to trust that deep intuitive voice. You're like, I've trusted it before and it was wrong. No, that wasn't actually that voice. It was one of the layers of sludge telling you, if you will go be that, you'll be someone. If you will look this way, then you'll be okay. If you, you know, take responsibility for all their problems and solve it, you can create harmony inside the family system. And when we have a lot of those layers of sludge, this is actually my official therapeutic term.
Layers of sludge. On poop on the baby,
yes,
here.
Exactly.
Washed off in a long time.
Having had 5 children, yes, that 15 times it does happen. Can, will, and does happen. But so I think as we heal and wash that off, we understand, oh, that urge in me to be put on a pedestal, for example, or that was because that's how we're programmed to think. there's special people and then there's regular people, you know, and we're
because the whole world operates like that. Like, it's
yes,
hierarchies of who's worth. You even have, where would a word like net worth come from?
Exactly. So, of course, we function inside of that. And it's actually in functioning inside of that, that if we're following love, we always get a really amazing and life-changing lesson at the end of following the message of that layer of strata. So those layers of strata are also incredible classrooms as we work through them on our healing journey. If the goal is love.
Yeah. And it's meant to be painful if you're not living out of love. Then, like, we all know it's out of whack. And so it's not supposed to, like, maybe too many of us have been so loyal and fake nice that we've put up with stuff that was never meant to be that way.
Almost everyone that I work with, there are people in their 20s and their 30s, but most folks are late 30s to 70s. And I think it's because compassionate people are incredibly strong. We have an unbelievable aptitude for suffering. This is like terrible, but it is actually, we are actually incredibly strong people by and large, and we can put up with a lot of bullshit. So it takes a while to get us to the point where, unfortunately, we can't do it another day. And that's usually when I get to, not all the time, but honestly, that's when I was at the edge of my greatest lessons and the things that were going to truly be epiphanies changed my life. And that's most of the amazing professionals that I work with. It's, man, this stuff is hard. This stuff is really hard. And our capacity is so amazing that we can kind of power through for a long time until we just can't. And there's so much power and love on the other side. It's not even funny. It is so good on the other side. And we're still lifing. Life's still lifing. You know, things break. Plumber just called me the other day and, you know, said, oh, there's a problem. And I had to pay to fix it. And, you know, like, we're here to have this human experience and we're going to have it. So you still need to go to the dentist. But the more sludge we get washed off and the more love we can just be and have it humming in its purity, it gets more and more fun and really, really easy. Because we just have to be a tree. We just have to be a human. We are love in our essence, which is amazing.
Yeah. It's being love, not having love or giving love or anything else. It's just being it. Yes, living it.
Elizabeth Gilbert, who I still haven't even read this book, but it was Nikki, who's an amazing writer on my team, brought her to me asking that question. I think that's Elizabeth Gilbert.
This one. All the way to the
that's
river.
So cool. Yes, I need to read it. She said, what would love have me do? Isn't that a question that she asked? And I love, that's my question. When I heard it, yes. I'm like, yes, that's the question I ask. That's the question that distills all the other questions, helps move all the other questions off. What would love have? What does love look like in this situation? Because sometimes love, not the way we've been programmed to think of love, love with a capital L, I mean, sometimes it is, don't go near that person. They don't know how to treat you with basic human respect for whatever reason. And by the way, the reason is mostly not your business. You can, you know, hey, Molly, you can sit around and think about why it's not just, but maybe, you know, you can think about that all day long. Is that what you're here to do? Is that what is in your highest good? Is that what's going to move the needle in any kind of way? No. What would love have you do? And in this case, love would respectfully, lovingly not keep playing in that playground anymore. I mean, sometimes love, so I just want to say that because a lot of times walking in love helps us work through things and improve relationships, but there are some relationships that need to be kept at a distance, and that too is love.
Well, and, you know, when my dad died 8 years ago, we were sitting around as siblings asking each other, is there anything left open that you need to forgive Dad for? And we all loved our dad. He was a really thoughtful, kind, very nice, unassuming. He would never hurt a flea. And what I said was, he didn't stop Mom from hitting me. And, you know, we all felt in to some extent like he loved my mom because he upheld her dreams and made her breakfast and did whatever. But even more loving would have been to say, please go see a counselor and stop behaving like this. And that would have done so much good to our family. And I think there's even, you know, I think that's even more obvious in things like addictions and things like that, where sometimes you just can't have that person in your house with you, you know, or somebody who's breaking the furniture is not going to be around, allowed near the furniture anymore. Like, it's just, it's almost like it's really about truth. You're looking at the data and making decisions based on the truth. And so not accepting reality or not believing reality when you see it sometimes feels like love or feels like loyalty or something, but that pain is usually a pretty good signal that, that might not be love. There might be a more clear way to express it.
Is that what love would have me do with a capital L? Exactly. We have lowercase l, what we're taught love looks like. And I think that's happens with the many of the folks I work with. If when we're trained to be loving, and loving means nice and kind and keeping someone comfortable and not rocking the boat, then it's really radical to realize love with a capital L includes me. And unless I am called to it, it is not loving for me to put myself in close proximity to someone who can't not treat me abusively. With a caveat, again, if somebody has a brain tumor and it's impacting their ability to take action and, you know, they're your child or your spouse and medical cares, that's just going to be really, really hard. And you may very well be called to help serve in that situation. But in general, it's interesting the way that many of us have been taught to love as compassionate people is to take on the consequences of other people's harmful behavior and to mitigate them, to clean up the messes, to make life comfortable anyways, because that's what we've been told love is. Love is to almost enable. We don't know that, but that's kind of what we've been taught. Turn the other cheek. Applied in a way that removes somebody's consequences from them. And because so many of us are so grossed out by the punitive nature of you know, like, make them pay, you know, that we were like, I don't want to be like that, which is good. But we end up going too far the other way. And part of the beautiful message of boundaries is that part of the thing that becoming boundaried, that's why I use the word boundaried instead of just boundaries, because we do have boundaries we can say with our mouth, but the actual real, like, life-changing, paradigm-shifting thing is to realize where our actual edges are and be able to walk in that way. And our edges are the edges love gives us, the architecture of what it means to be a human as love. That's what being boundaried is. And when I become boundaried, what would love have me do? Love, unless it is a very specific calling, does not want me to actively choose to put myself in a position where I'm going to be treated with abuse, because that's not love. Love includes, you said this at the beginning of our talk, we'd use the word self-love maybe to describe it. Love includes me and you too.
Mm-hmm.
That's nice.
Well, what's helped me the most with that, because I used to get very upset and resistant when people would talk about self-love, because it sounds so close to selfishness and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But when I think of it as, I've been gifted with the responsibility to care for only one body. Like, this is the only one I was given for my time on the planet. And It's nobody else's job. And so using words like responsibility and duty and jobs and stuff like that doesn't sound as soft and sweet.
It's true. It's true.
But it's true. Like, I have got to put food into this particular body and keep it hydrated and give it sleep. And this is the one kingdom I have been given to care for. And the better job I do caring for this one responsibility I have, the more this body is going to be able to care for a few other people, not 5,000 or 80 million, probably. We're all going to do it together. We're going to look out for each other. But if I forget my main responsibility because I'm overgiving or overtaking other people's consequences, the results are not going to be pretty. I mean, I know because I've gone into 4 major burnouts in my life. So yes. Took me a few rounds. Yes.
I think it's so good to talk about it, though, because I think it's actually very normal because we haven't been given the boundaries of our actual responsibility. And it is so important. I think when we understand the great classroom of love, then we understand the most loving thing I can do here is let this person experience the consequences of their behavior. Because what, for example, someone who treats others abusively, with the caveat of safety first always. However, if you are in close relationship with someone who's behaving horribly, who's just spewing poison at you or operating with relational violence. Now, we all have bad days. I'm not saying that, but just as a way of life. What is the behavioral message we give if we stay and never do anything? Yeah. We're actually behaviorally saying this is perfectly acceptable. Even if with our mouth we're saying that's not acceptable, you should change. If nothing is happening on a behavioral level, we're actually constantly reinforcing that that is perfectly acceptable. And it is only by saying, I'm going to have to do this, or I'm going to have, it's only by changing our relationship with that behavior so that it is not acceptable for us, not in a judgy way, not in a mean way, not in a very respectful but clear way. That is how we stop taking the consequences of the anti-relational behavior upon ourselves and give them to the person who's engaging in that behavior so they can figure out what to do with it. And yeah, those consequences,
and it can be
their
so, and it can be so gentle too. I mean, I don't even think we need, yes, to go. I mean, obviously, if there's abuse, that has to stop. And we can even go to like this really moment by moment, which, you know, my family is filled with all kinds of neurodivergent, you know, highly sensitive people, a lot of autism and ADHD and stuff. And the needs are really obvious. And I'm learning for myself that, like, okay, if one of my kids says, I need to sit down, or I need some water, I need to put on some headphones, it's too loud in here, what's keeping the rest of us from doing that all the time? Like, I've got one kid who does not like people chewing near them. And so they're just like, hey, I'm going to go away until the snacks are done. Text me when nobody's chewing anymore. Like, that's not mean. That's just taking care of your own brain and your nervous system.
Love that.
You know, say what you want and need, and it doesn't have to get to the point where like, oh, I haven't slept in 3 nights because my husband's snoring. It's like, we'll be sleeping in the other room until you've seen the doctor to get whatever that is fixed or whatever. Not that my actual husband snores, but.
No, exactly. It's there's a way to do this full of honor for self and others. There's a way to do this. Now, do we know how? Most of us don't. That's not the way we were taught to exist and function in this world. So it's very much a learning process with a lot of experimentation, which means a lot of oops, not that way. That didn't work. Oops, not that way. Yeah. That didn't work. Oh, I tried this way. That felt really good. And that felt really good for everyone else. Okay, we're on to something here. Let's start practicing this and seeing how this feels.
It's developing. It takes so much courage the first times because it feels wrong and evil and like totally against. But then it becomes so relaxing. You're like, no, that didn't take any courage at all. That was just the way that I am now. Because of course I'm gonna take care of.
It's so true. It takes courage because it might not go right. It might not work. You might screw up, but. It's so fun to think like, yeah, well, it already sucks. It already doesn't work. The way we're doing it doesn't work. So let's start with humbleness. Let me start experimenting with what might work. And if we just have the courage to make mistakes and get it wrong, understanding you're already getting it wrong, you're on a trajectory right now that simply won't ever work. It does not work what you're doing. Trying something different that doesn't work is good data. You now know two ways that don't work. So try a third one now and like start collecting. And it might be that your perfect solution is in attempt 56. Well, guess what? You're never going to find it if you don't do all 55 of the things that don't work. 56.
When I read once, there was this. It was called the anger ladder. I forget who produced it. You've probably seen it before, but it was like the different ways that you can express your anger. And so like physical and verbal violence with, you know, there were kind of really bad ways to express your anger. But then as you learned, but the interesting thing was that passive aggressive was the worst. Like lying and looking like you're being nice when you actually hate something. That was worse than violence on this anger ladder. So by the time you get to where you're just yelling at someone because you're mad, that's actually healthier than yelling and hitting. But you don't jump from passive aggressive, which most of us are well versed in, to suddenly saying, how you think and feel and what you would like, you know, in a calm, rational way. Most of us have to go through a phase, probably in perimenopause in our 40s, where we start swearing and yelling at people for a while. You know, it's part of the making your way up the ladder.
That's so cool. Or if possible, go out and yell at the ocean. If you can have enough control, go take it somewhere. But I love that. Letting the yelling out. Man, we could do a whole hour on just that. The anger.
I know. Let's do more anger.
Anyway.
For today, though, if we can just bring it back full circle. Everything we do at Awaken is always so related to love and also spirituality. And we've talked about leaving fundamentalist systems and things, but what is it like for you, or what does spirituality represent for you, like the real deal?
When I was coming out of my little box, I did a lot of studying of different religions because I thought I had to pick one. And I know many people in last month, I just spent some time with some Sufi Muslims that just blew my socks off with how much love was emanating from them. I have a dear friend who's devout Buddhist, who I don't even know if she actually walks on the earth. She probably floats. She is like next level love. And for her, Buddhism has been the right vehicle for her. I have loved ones who are beautiful examples of Christianity and how it can be so life-giving and glorious. I have Jewish friends. I know you do too. There's so many ways to there's a gal I know who would probably the best term would be pagan. I think I'm not sure if she's Wiccan or not. I think she is. She's the embodiment of love. I know all of these things that I'm saying, by the way, as a fundamentalist would be, you know, terrible. One friend of mine I just spent time with actually is 100% secular rationalist is the embodiment of love. So for me, I was searching for how I was going to have to be. What is the group I'm going to be in? And I had a dream, one of those dream/visions things that you can't really explain, but is just as real to me today as it is, as it was when I had it maybe 20 years ago. No, like 17, 16 years ago, whenever it happened. In this dream, I popped out with an audible sound. There was like a really loud pop. And suddenly I was floating over the world. And you know those Richard Scarry children's books, that the Richard Scarry or Scarry, I don't know what his name was, but he drew like the little bear is driving the fire truck and all the little animals have their little jobs in this little cute little world and everything's working along. I loved reading those books to my kids. And I looked down and on planet Earth, I realized, oh, it's not Earth, it's Christianity. And everything was just moving and doing, there, it was a life-giving system for some. And then I looked over and I was like, oh, there's LDS, you know, my Mormon friends, they have a whole system and a way of doing things different from the one the type of Christianity I knew. And then, oh, there's Hinduism. Whoa, cool. Look at that. Oh, there's Buddhism. Whoa, look at that. And I'm like, what am I? Which one am I supposed to pick? What do I do? That kind of feeling. And then I realized I'm nestled in this big hand. And this hand has got me. In fact, it pulled me up out and it's holding me. And the hand was love. It's the best word I could put, is my understanding of God. Suddenly the need to know the right name, it felt silly. It just, that need floated away. I don't, like, the hand doesn't give two shits if I'm calling it this name, that name. I don't even know what name to call it. And there it is holding me with so much love. I am loved. I am love. And I knew in that way that you just know in a dream that I can go back down. I can go be this or that. I could pick any of them I want. If my desire is to become love, they all can serve. There are good things in each one of them. And I also don't have to. And I just thought, I'm just going to stay in this hand. And that's what I've done. And I am love, just as you are, just as everybody listening is. At my core, I am love. So my job is to become that and to shed anything that is not love, but to be the weird, wacky cell in this great body of the humans that I am, the way we do the most good in this world is to become ourselves and then be, go where you're supposed to be in that body, be that eyeball, be the nose hair, I don't know, be the armpit, be all of these things. Like, there's no special function. The whole thing's special. The whole thing's amazing. Go be where you're supposed to be. Do it. Receive the life-giving stuff. Spread the life-giving stuff. Get in flow. That to me is spirituality, is recognizing who we really are and getting aligned with that higher purpose, while loving the weird little funky cell that we are. When we're all doing that, this body is going to sing and we are going to be able to create such a different world. And that's what I'm here for.
Thank you. Uniquely you, exactly whichever cell you are, and part of the bigger whole of things. Molly, I love being with you.
It's so fun to be with you, Christy. Yeah, it's easy to talk with you every single time.
I have pre-ordered your book. Can you tell us the title again?
It's called The Great All, It's by Molly Davis Moon, and it is actually available. It will be in bookstores February 24th. I'm not sure when this will be coming out, but the pre-orders are available on Amazon if you search. And it's, I guess the pre-orders really help with the book sales and the algorithm or something like that. So if somebody takes a look at it and wants to, it's a full cartoon. It actually is a vision I was given. I asked Love, actually. Okay, that's great. So Love's Love. What about evil, though? There are things that happen that are just, they're not just ignorance. There are actually evil things that happen. Please explain that. And I ended up getting it was like a cartoon movie that played in my head, this parable that riveted me. And I'm like, I got to make a book out of this. And 3 or 4 years later, found a publisher who was willing to take a slightly above average artist's cartoons. Because I'm like, it's got to be full color. It's got to be on black pages. I know. I saw it. I know it. And they loved it. And it was actually one of the gals who helped get The Alchemist published. It was such a the wildest, weirdest combination of meeting. I start reading the book to her. She starts crying. She's like, I'm supposed to help you publish this book. And I just adore her. She's such a neat human being because it's such a risk to publish a book like this. So I'm really excited about it coming up.
I've heard it's gorgeous. And knowing you, the metaphors are so rich and beautiful. So it's, I can't wait to.
It's a metaphor. I mean, if somebody is interested in Boundaries work with me, that's at boundaried.com, boundaried with a D. And there's a lot of fun stuff there, from free stuff to coming and work with me more closely. And the book, I say that because the book information will be on one of the pages there as well. Probably the spot to figure out, because I think I link right to the Amazon page. So if someone can't figure out how to search for it, just go to boundaried.com and it'll be in there somewhere.
I recommend you to everyone I know, and I mentioned you in my memoir, too. I'm sure we'll put a link to your
site. Thank you.
So everybody go see Molly, for sure.
That is so cool. And likewise, if somebody is looking to be a coach, I know where to send them, where they will be loved, nurtured, nourished. It's fun to work for Love, because we just get to lift each other up, shout each other out. We're changing the world. Literally, we are changing the world, and not on pedestals. We're just cells doing our job, and that's just how we literally change the body. So cool.
Thank you, my dear.
The voices.